Okay, I'm
Great.
back, and this is Jesse again, and I'm excited today because I have an interview with one of my absolute favorite teachers and great friends, Scott Burnett. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Hi. Good, thanks.
Excellent. And so we're talking today about life after high school and working on the book, Secrets to a Successful Life, by those that had 20 years to think about it. In your case, a few more than 20. But,
a few more than 20.
Yeah. And if you don't mind, can you briefly summarize your career, your life as a teacher, and give us anybody who's listening a little bio just so we know a little bit more about you?
Sure. I intended on being a university professor and so had a very focused academic track, undergraduate in Korean language, Asian studies, and history, three separate majors and a minor in drama. And then I have a master's degree in political science, international relations, and my PhD work was in East Asian history, modern East Asian history. And I did teach at University of Washington and spent 4 years at BYU teaching, but I found that I was becoming increasingly narrow in my focus. And I have lots of interests, and I was finding that I was having some success. I published a book, and I was doing fine, but was not very happy because of the continued narrowness of my work. And so I decided that I would sort of make a big jump and go into public education. So
can I ask you really quick, what were you becoming too focused on? What were you being pigeonholed in a particular area?
Yeah. In academics, you the further on you go, the more specific the focus. So I, for instance, in my PhD dissertation, was working on the role of Korea in the Vietnam War, and that became my world. And so I wasn't able to read broadly. I was generally interested in Korea and Asia, but not only interested in Korea and Asia. And it just got a little, frankly, boring, honestly. And I just felt like I wasn't serving the world in the way that I wanted to either. So it's a pretty momentous. It wasn't an easy decision because the loss of status and loss of money and loss of opportunities were all initially all things that I felt very deeply after I made the change, but it was the right decision for sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
And then, so how did that go? What years are you talking here?
Oh, started my undergraduate in 76. Finished the PhD work in, I'm guessing 92, something like that. So a long time in college.
Yeah, I think when I met you, you were finishing it. So that would be about 1992, where you had just finished it or something like that. That's
right,
great.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I taught for several years while I was in the PhD program, the job at Anacortes was the first job I interviewed for and the first job I got. So,
oh, great.
After that. Yeah.
And what year did you started there in 92? Is that when you
93
you started? Okay, yeah. And then you were there your whole high school teaching career, right? You still are,
right? Still
so
there.
From 93 to the present.
That's right.
That's pretty good.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And anything you want to mention about that, just that experience? That's quite a few years, so maybe a highlight or two in there?
Of teaching in Anacortes?
Yeah.
Well, I think, the perfect job because I get to teach. Right now my teaching schedule is three periods of drama and a period of what's called AVID, which is working with kids that have some kind of disadvantage in their background, be it socioeconomic or ethnic or some sort of thing that's keeping them from going to college or might keep them from going to college. It's all college-focused work. And then I teach two periods of world religion, honors world religions, which is, so in every one of those cases, the kids have chosen to be there. So it makes a huge difference to have kids that have decided to be there instead of kids that were put there.
Oh, that's, you know, doubt. That is
Yeah. So
great. That sounds awesome. What's your favorite part about being a teacher?
Well, the kids, of course. I get to spend all day with creative, very smart kids who are working hard at getting better. And so a lot of the things that I think make teachers sad and wear them down, I just don't encounter very often. I mean, of course, I encounter some of it, but by and large, I get to just help kids get better at what they want to do. So, and they're really bright, bright kids, really smart, good kids with good hearts. And so it's inspiring to work with kids.
Well, I remember I felt I'm not a part of any of these current programs, but 20 years ago I was in some of your programs that you started and classes
yeah.
that you had then and enjoyed it. And I remember you as being a great teacher. So I know that
yeah.
I can vouch for that. That's good.
Yeah, and I always feel like I get the better deal, but I'm glad that it's useful to somebody.
Absolutely, yeah. We got Scott McKinstry and I both have really good memories, and we had that had a good time. Well, now let's get real for a second. So, what's your least favorite
yeah.
thing about being a teacher?
I don't appreciate people who are only tangentially connected to education. Dictating what happens in schools, and I'm speaking specifically of politicians who have a political or sometimes religious agenda, and certainly an economic agenda. That bothers me a great deal, and then administrators who are confused about what good teaching is and try to interfere when they have often very little experience in the classroom. So I would say those two things, yeah.
So administrators might know a little bit more about education, but they don't have that, they're not in the trenches, so they don't have that direct connection. Is that kind of what you're referring to?
Right, and a good administrator is really worth their weight in gold, and we've had some, but we've had some very bad ones also, and of course, an administrator, in their heart, they want to do good things, but sometimes the best thing is to not do anything, and that's just sometimes hard for them to understand, and so some of them come in wanting to do things when they should just listen and support, and so that's been the worst part of it.
Like a leadership, that's a leadership challenge, it sounds like. They need to learn how to delegate
much.
And trust the teachers who are doing
right.
their jobs, to do their jobs, basically.
Right, and there are situations where an administrator needs to step in and do and make changes or do hard things, and I find them very reluctant to do that either. So,
right.
sometimes... So, I mean, it's very. I understand that. I would never be an administrator and tell somebody that they need to stop teaching. That would be very hard for me to do. But sometimes it's necessary, and they're very reluctant to do that part of the job. And I think that's the most important part of the job.
Yeah, well, that's good. How effective do you think the current educational system is in preparing people for life after high school?
Well. I mean, it depends on what standard you're using.
Then let's say you can be as broad and general as you want, or specific
yeah.
if you want to go
right.
from your point of view or a particular
sure.
area. It's an open question
right.
on purpose.
Well, I'll just respond, and you can steer me in a different direction if you'd like a different response. So, I'm thinking of the bad press that we often get about how we're teaching and how we're how students are achieving compared to the rest of the world. First of all, if you look at the raw numbers, we're doing better and teaching more students and a broader group of students than anybody in the world. And some of the people that we're being compared to are taking the bottom third and really not educating them or not counting them in the testing scores. So we can sometimes look bad at when compared to Japan or Korea or China. But I've really observed both Korea and Japan up close, and I would not want my children to have to endure that system of schooling, no matter what the results are. I don't think any Americans would. So when people hold those places up by comparison, I think that nobody would have the desire to put our children through that. And the other part of it, too, is that when you look at universities around the world, foreigners are coming really exclusively to the United States to do their university training. They're not going to China or Japan or Korea. They're coming to the United States. So,
right.
So on one level, we prepare them well for the university system, in many cases. So at least our universities are renowned throughout the world. But I fear that we're not teaching some without meaning to, we're sort of teaching bad soft skills that I think impact our students badly. We're not teaching them to be flexible. We're often adjusting programs to fit them or giving them multiple ways of doing what they need to do when, in fact, what they need is to learn to work in whatever system they're given and to find a variety of ways of tackling a problem. So often we don't make them work effectively in groups. Often we don't teach grit very well because we're always finding ways to help them along the way. And certainly that's really important in elementary school and maybe even middle school. But in high school, we've got to do a better job of teaching them to be more flexible in their thinking and in more dynamic and focused in their work. We don't make them work very hard.
You know what? I love the word you said, grit. That describes it perfectly.
Yeah.
So the difference is more that more dynamic and focused in their work, but not necessarily, you know, some total totalitarian, crazy, you know, rigid system that they might find in an Asian country. You know, that's what you're saying is that they have a system that might be too overly harsh, but we have a system that might be too soft.
Too soft. Too many ways to not meet due dates or we often accept really low quality work in an effort to just pass on the problem, and so that's very harmful to kids, I think.
You know, this is another question that just came into my mind. There's a lot of at least, you know, and it may not be everywhere, but a lot of the parents and the kids that I've been talking to the last couple of years, it seems like there's more vocational technical school options, and maybe that's a good thing, I don't know, and a lot of people really push for that, as opposed to your traditional liberal arts education with a broad background. I don't know if you want to talk to that at all. Related to that is, you know, some people are questioning, do kids even need to go to college? You know, a lot of kids shouldn't go to college, and I hear debates about those topics all the time. I don't know if you hear that, or maybe that's just me.
Yeah,
but
no, I mean, and I'm a great believer in a broad experience, particularly in high school. But I guess it just depends. Nobody can get a job, a good job, a job that was a career kind of job after taking career technical classes at a high school. So to suggest that that's an option is silly. And when you look at the numbers in terms of career options, college education pays so much better than anything else that we at least ought to keep that thought in their mind and prepare them to have that option open to them all the way through high school. It's just a shame to suggest that a kid should be that's sort of the European system in some sense, that they're vocational and that's where they need to go. There are jobs in vocational areas, there are good jobs in vocational areas, but you can't get a job out of high school and in those areas you've got to go on and do something else. So I think it's fine to have those programs. I'm thrilled to have those programs. And I think that the straight A kids ought to have some experience in metalwork or, you know, woodworking class or something of that sort. But the key for me is that they ought to come out of high school with as many options open to them as possible.
That's great. That's a good answer. And I agree personally. In fact, I had wished I had worked harder in reading more when I was younger.
Right.
I did a lot of reading. I did more reading than a lot of people I knew, and I still, I've later in life picked up reading as a habit, and it's changed everything. And I think when we're, the more we get away from learning about history or learning about the humanities, I think it lessens us as a, you know, as a society and as citizens, and but that's a whole other tangent. The vocational technical school doesn't necessarily automatically mean a job. You still end up having to go some entry level anyway, and or you might not even be able to get a job in that industry depending on the demand. That's kind of what you're saying about those technical programs.
And I think it's fine to have an area. I mean, some kids really only stay in school because they are able to take a metals class. I mean, metals is the one that really right now keeps a good number of kids that are marginal kids in our school, and that's great. I don't want to minimize that at all, but to suggest at some point in high school you take a track and the track is vocational and you shouldn't have to prepare for college, to me, is a great disservice, especially when I think of where I was in high school. I mean, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I don't think any of them really know what they want to do. And boys in particular, their brains aren't done cooking yet, you know? And so why would you suggest that that's the direction you're going to send them when they're freshmen in high school?
Exactly. Yeah. And here's another question. What do you wish you could teach high school students that you currently aren't able to teach them under the current system or under the current situation that you're in?
Well, in my classes, I have a great deal of freedom to teach what I want to teach. So I don't really have any limitations on my teaching as it is, but I guess the larger question is, what do I wish they would learn maybe in high school before they went on? And I would guess that it goes back to that. I mean, I have two kind of contradictory approaches. One is they have to work harder, and they have to stop making excuses, and they've got to be able to be flexible. I mean, I just read just recently that somebody graduating from high school now will have at least four different careers, not just different employers, but four distinctly different areas that they'll have to work in. And so things are changing so fast now that just because you have a computer science degree doesn't mean that you're going to be working in that very narrow field. You're going to be in lots of different fields. And that's a change from my upbringing. It was pretty safe to get a degree and work in that area your whole life, but it's quite different now. So I wish I had let them know that in addition to learning math and science and in English, they're going to have to learn to be really flexible intellectually and in their work life. So I wish we could teach them that. That's a hard thing to I think that the system is preparing people with the idea that they're going to take the set of information, go to college, get a sort of more narrow focus set of information, and then work in a career their whole life. And it's just not the reality anymore.
Okay, that makes sense. That's a, you kind of answer the next question too, but I don't know if you want to add to it. The next question I had was, what do you wish you could tell all graduating seniors about life after high school? But that's it. Maybe it's a little different because we're talking seniors now, not just like the kids that are going through high school. But right when they're leaving, you know, or they're getting close to it, is there what would you tell them?
Well, this is different than career advice. This is a little bit different, but
more like life advice.
And that is that I wish that they would understand that nothing ever stays the same. And so when they're in the highest moment of their life, that's not going to last. And when they're in the lowest moment of their life, that's not going to last. Things are always changing, and that change is a natural part of it. And it can't always be wonderful, and it won't always be bad. And they just got to be aware that things will change. And so they got to find the center in themselves that doesn't change, because life will always change. Relationships, jobs, physical health, all of those things change, and so I think that's a surprise to some people, both the good and the bad, that they kind of expect that it will be predictable and consistent, and it never is.
That's a terrific answer, by the way. Yeah, you made me think just now. I'm taking notes. I had to write all that down. That's good.
Yeah.
What are high school kids and their parents doing right when it comes to preparing themselves for life after high school? And I'm not just talking about college. I'm talking about just life. And I know you know a lot of kids. You've seen a lot of kids over the years, and maybe some parents that were involved too. So what are they doing right that you think is a good idea and they should keep doing?
Well, I can't really talk about the body of parents and senior and students, but the students that and parents, the families that are doing it right, have a semi-serious approach to their work and high expectations, but they understand that the whole human is more important than any grade. So there have to be expectations, and that has to be there. But they enjoy their participation in sports, and they enjoy their participation in the academics. They have a zest for life and for the experience. And then the opposite of that are parents and students who participate in sports because it's supposedly looks good for colleges, or their dad did it, and so they have to do it, or their mom did it, and there's a pressure to achieve, to make somebody proud, or to check off something for a future, you know, for future. So I think that's that, and no expectations. I mean, there's a body of probably, I would say, half the students whose families don't have strong, clear expectations of them, and they're just sort of adrift. And if we're lucky, they get interested in something and they find a mentor, but most of them are not lucky, and they just sort of casually go along. I've often said that that the system we have is really an amazing system if you engage with it, if you punch it around and engage with it in some fashion actively. But it's a pretty bad system if you're just going to be floating along and letting it happen to you. And I see a lot of students that are just floating along, assuming that the system will take care of them, assuming that they'll learn the things they need to learn and be prepared for college and life. And that's just not what the system's built to do. The system's built to provide opportunities, and it does that pretty well, probably better than any system in the world, I would think. You go to Europe, even in the best schools, you can't do music or drama or art, and we allow that to happen. But that's the biggest problem, I think, is that families and students assume that the system, that they can just be passive participants and the system will take care of them.
That's great. That's a good perspective. What mistakes do you see students making in high school when it comes to thinking about their future and taking action? What are they doing wrong specifically?
Well, they think that grades matter. And, of course, they do in one sense. When you get bad grades, some doors shut. But as soon as you've gotten into college, your high school grades are immaterial. As of that moment, your high school grades are immaterial. So they're useful and important, but they soon become absolutely unimportant. And the people who are 4.0 students are sometimes startled that all that work and all that the pride they took in being a 4.0 student is so poorly regarded or is completely disregarded from that point on. And I think other students are surprised that they can prove themselves completely anew in a different circumstance. So one of the great things about our system in America is that a kid can be a C student in high school and go to a community college and get straight A's and then go to Harvard. That can happen here. It can't happen anywhere else.
That is really a good point. I read a study not too long ago that was related to this. I can't remember the details. I have to go back and review it. But the basic idea was they were studying to see if the grades that kids had in high school or how they were when they got into college had any impact on how they left. And they actually found that, you know, if a kid came in with a 4.0, it had nothing to do with how they were going to do in college. That was what they determined. They said that the ones that came in who had poor grades, it didn't mean that they were going to do poorly again, and it didn't mean the kids that started out well would do well. Right. What they determined was the factor was just their willingness to work hard. It seems common sense, but to a lot of people it's not. Right. No, they came in, and the kids that had come in with poor grades, if they decided, geez, this is important to me, I really need, like you said, they go to a couple years of community college. I have a couple friends that did terrible in high school, and then they decided, man, I got to get my life in order. They worked really hard in community college and then went to a big university and did really well. But, you know, it took them a few years to figure it out. I think it's like you said, especially the guys, their brains are still cooking for a few years there.
That's exactly right. Well, I really believe that, some people are really blessed with the ability to do well in school. And so doing well in school doesn't mean you're doing well in life. And so that's a talent that has limited places that you can use it. You can do well in school. That's great, and that's important, but that doesn't necessarily mean you'll do well in any other context. And I value more than straight A's or even intellectual ability, the thing that I value most of all from an education point of view is a curious mind. And I find that many of my 4.0 students are not that curious. They're able to regurgitate in a way that satisfies the grade part, but they're not curious. They don't ask questions. They don't take inherently interesting things and pursue them to the next step. So I find that not 100% certainly of the best students. There's a number of students that are inherently curious and competent too, but being intellectually curious is pretty important.
That's great. And I know, let's just move on to one more question here, because this relates real closely. What's the biggest problem you see for high school graduates? And I'm keeping that broad because it could be a large socioeconomic question, or it could be a specific, you know, stories that you might know. Or what do you think the biggest problem is that you see today for high school graduates?
The inability to plan, the inability to keep options open, let's just say that, to plan long-term. And I just see over and over kids even going to good colleges and and I make no judgment about the morality of it, but getting caught up in drugs and alcohol or parties or whatever, and just having so many opportunities limited because of making bad choices in those areas. So I think the inability to, because I don't think we've done that. That's, again, something we haven't, I don't even know if it's our job, honestly. I don't know if it's our job as educators to do that. It's, we haven't for such a short period of time. But
right.
But I just see them not able to think in a long-term fashion, and I don't know how to, I don't know how that happens, but goal setting certainly is a part of it, and that's the thing that I think I see them struggling with the most. Everything is, and this is a contradiction, because I really believe that the moment is the most important thing, that not looking backwards and forwards at things, because the future and the past don't really exist. They're not real. They're not real things. The past isn't real and the future isn't real. This moment is the most important thing. So living in the moment is really important, but you've got to keep all the options open going forward. I guess, I mean, that's the so it's a little bit contradictory. I really believe in the moment and living in the moment, but having a perspective that imagines the future in a way that allows them to plan.
Yeah, that's good. But do you think, in terms of how things have changed, you know, over the last 10, 20, 30 years, do you think it's harder now, or is it the same in terms of opportunities? Do you think everybody ought to go to college, or some people should or shouldn't? Or how do you think, you know, in terms of what they face, these high school students?
Well, certainly, I think it's changed a little bit. I mean, there are more opportunities now for business, for small business, for ideas to be put in place with reasonable startup costs. It's unlike anything that I lived through as a young person. So there are alternate ways of doing things, but really, yeah, it all comes down to skills. And so if you can get those skills in a different way, great. In many cases, you can't. And it's the most efficient place to gain some of those skills sometimes, but not always. I think for most kids, the goal should be to go to college, and because they don't know what they want to do yet. And the college is a pretty efficient place to look at options and
yes.
to get passion around something, as long as you're not going into debt to do it. And you can do that in a junior college, for that matter.
Right.
So I think, I mean, again, the numbers are the numbers, and there's no question that on average, a person will have greater earning power over a lifetime if you go to college and if you don't go to college. And we all always have these shining examples of right now of people who didn't go to college or who quit college. I mean, the titans of the computer industry are good examples. But that was a pretty unusual time.
Right,
they're
yeah.
not really hiring a lot of programmers right now who don't have that punch card to get into the dance.
For every one of those arguments, there may be validity to it, you know, those that say, well, college
yeah.
is a waste of time. But for every one of
right.
those arguments, there's also the other side, which is, you know,
right.
I've heard it said, yes, Bill Gates did, you know, was able to drop out and start a business. Great. But for every one of him that drops out and becomes successful, there's thousands
yeah.
who dropped out and are flipping burgers, you know?
Right.
So, it, definitely not an indicator of success. It's just he did it in spite of dropping out, not because he dropped out.
And, you know, I face this a little bit when my students tell me they want to go into the theater, into acting as a career, and I tell them it's a horrible choice, and that the average actor is flipping burgers and trying to get jobs at the same time, and it's a hard, hard career. And if they looked me in the face and said, go to hell, Mr. Burnett, I'm going to do it anyway because that's what I need to breathe, then I know they're going to be okay. They'll take responsibility for it. They may not be successful, but they'll at least be passionate about it and not and take responsibility for it. So I would say the same thing. The numbers would suggest that going to college is the best way to secure a future. It's not the only way. And what I would suggest to my students is go to college. Unless if they know what they want to do and they know the alternate route clearly in their own mind, go for it. That's great. You can always go back to college. But most people that I've seen, most students who are talking about doing something other than college don't know what they want to do. They're just hoping they'll fall upon something. I mean, they say they want to be entrepreneurs, but what the hell is that?
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. Most of the time they don't know yet either. So.
Yeah, right.
Well, this has all been really good stuff. Thank you. So I want to turn it couple final questions. This one is more about you and just you personally, knowing what you now know, and if you could write your 18-year-old self a letter and send it back in time. So basically, if you could meet yourself when you were that age and maybe encourage yourself or warn or direct your life, what would you write to yourself?
I would say, everything is going to be fine. Don't operate from fear and always be kind. That's what I would say.
Simple. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just principles.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well,
is
there anything that you would add because of, you know, putting together this project? Is there any information or resources or interviews or any other ideas you think I need to include in this book to make it valuable for people? The goal is, you know, a lot of my classmates are already looking at some of the stuff I'm doing here because I blog some of this, but my goal is to be helpful. I want to actually provide something valuable to students, but and most likely their parents, because I imagine their parents are more likely to buy the book than the kid. But something that I could, you know, that we could share with young people who are at that age. Because I don't know about you, but when I was a teenager, I often didn't listen to my parents. I might listen to an author in a book. I might listen to my favorite teacher or coach or my friend's parents more before I'd listen to my own sometimes. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but. Anyway, what would you suggest?
Something you said earlier, I think it's really so true. Everybody's path is different. There's no right way to do any of this life in terms of if you go to school, what your major is, if it's a STEM area, if it's the arts. There's just no right or wrong to any of that. There's no wrong decision. It's not wrong to drop out of high school. It's not wrong to there's a million ways to do it. But the thing that will make the biggest difference to a person is if they can arrive at principles. That's the word you used. If they can arrive at principles about how they want to live their life regardless of what happens to them. And it doesn't have to be a lot. Things like grit, things like flexibility, things like being kind. If they can arrive at those kinds of things, it doesn't really matter what happens. I mean, they have to work hard, and that's a principle too. But it doesn't matter. Nothing else will matter than those things. Doesn't matter if you're a lawyer, a doctor, a scientist, or a teacher, or a janitor. Doesn't matter. Because we all are going to live a certain amount of time, and we're all going to die. And the key is how we're living our life. And so if a kid can arrive at some principles about how to live, they're going to be happy, and nothing else will matter.
That's so great. Thank you, Scott Burnett. I totally appreciate it. This has been so good. Is there anything that I didn't ask or any last words or anything else you want to add?
Well, I just wanted to add one thing, and that's that I feel so lucky to have been a teacher in my life. I said earlier that I always feel like I get more than I give, and And I do, it's got me through some really rough patches because I have to be a better person every day than I really am. And that helps me to be a good person. And I'm so grateful that this is how I've spent my life.
That's so awesome. That's great. Thank you very much. I'm going to hold on 1 second here. I appreciate everything that you've given me today.